And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 663. We're recapping week one, Fab. Yes, we have made it to Fab. It has happened this season. So we're going to come at you at the beginning of every week, recapping Fab, talking some more fantasy goodness and whatnot. Today, we'll talk some Fab. We'll talk some recent news. You guys brought a lot of awesome listener questions. Might get into some bold predictions. We'll see if time permitting on that one. But before we get into all of that, you can find myself on Twitter at BDIntric. And my guest, who you'll see a lot early in the week, it'll be him or one other loud guy that talks a lot, who you probably know I'm talking about, likes to wear a crown from time to time. But today, we're joined by the other half of that duo. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T, and he's writing over at Sports Ethos this year. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Bubba, I'm doing great. It's awesome being back on with you, and I feel like this is a great time to be on. The season's about to start, drafts are wrapping up, and it's time to get going, so...
Yep, it is time to get going. It's serious time. Like Fab this past week, I think you wrapped up your last main last night. We're recording on Tuesday. I finished my last OC this morning. So it's like bittersweet because drafting is like the most fun in the world. But it's time for 6 months of fun torture is the best way I can put it going forward. Just for fun, how do you think your draft season went? We could focus on your three mains if you want. How do you feel it all went, all things considered? Because especially in 15s and those rooms, there's going to be a few moments here and there where you're just like, and you just have to keep kind of going. So how do you like your three mains?
I like them. It was people talk about it all the time, and it's really a thing, but the transition from draft, like draft and holds or just early drafting to the main event is you really have to be willing to adjust your player evaluations in terms of like ADP and all that. And like guys you could get later in DCs, if they're like a hot player, like Michael Garcia, for example, it's the price has changed so much. So trying to battle that was tough. I mapped up all my mains and I was able to pretty much stick to the plan for all three of them, which was pretty good. I was a little pitcher heavy in the first two in the early rounds. And I tried to go switch it up in the last one, just to kind of do like a DFS type mindset, you know, I don't want the exact same build in all three, but, they went pretty well. I had Toby CLQ for my second one, I think.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to get that in any main event. You're going to get some tough competition. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh boy, he's going to really bring it. And, it was fun. And, I'm to the point now where I don't get nervous anymore because I've done it for a couple of years now. I remember my first year, I was just so nervous, but now it's like, I look forward to it. Like you mentioned, Curlin, we were talking about our main events coming up and we were both so excited because he got the jitters out of the way after doing it for the first time last year. And once you get into a main event, and I know you did the MEQ, so hopefully you win that, you can experience what I'm talking about next year. And anybody else who's listening, I know a lot of listeners for your show and your Bubba and the Bloom have joined MEQs this year. It's exhilarating. The thrill is, I don't like roller coasters, but it's like my roller coaster the first time you do it. hopefully I didn't screw anything up. I don't think I did, but I'm excited to see the live standings, and I'm gonna hate it at the same time too.
Yeah, it's great, and it's funny you say like you're not as nervous as you once were, because I'm kind of feeling that way in the OCs now. I think this is my third year doing them, or fourth year, something like that. So we're pretty close in line with the same timeline of you doing mains, me doing my 12s, just different things. I remember the first year I was doing them, I'm like, oh my god, $350, like what am I doing, this is crazy, like what, like this whole thing, imagine paying $1,750 everybody and going through it. But it's like you put in all the work, but like year two, I live streamed two out of the three. I'm just like doing my thing, and this, like today, like behind the curtains for everybody, I was working in my truck and I had it on my iPad. I was drafting off my iPad while I was working all day today, because I'm just like at that comfort zone now. I was still focused on it. Also helped that I was at the turn. So like you make a pick and it takes a while to get back to you. So you can kind of, you know, get a few things done here and there, but I'm not like glued to everything like I once was. And hey, we'll see. Maybe I get crushed in this league. Who knows? But I just feel like at this point of the year, all the time we put in, all the time, like work, it's just, you know, go through the motions now. You already know how to bob and weave. You know how to do this, that, and the other. It's almost like take away a lot of the stress and just go and do it type scenario. So it's nice to have it done. It also is, like I said, bittersweet because drafting is just the best, you know, aphrodisiac out there in the world. That's why we play gladiators. That's why we, you know, draft in October or September for some of us. It's just what we do. So fun stuff. How many Yahoo leagues did you end up getting into? Because if those that are regular listeners, Ben was kind enough to help us with a Yahoo preview about a month or so ago.
just one, unfortunately. So I think I had told you what was going on. So I was trying to schedule. So originally my home league was supposed to be tonight. It had to get moved to tomorrow night. And the plan was to draft my 12s last. So I would have done my home league tonight and a normal public Yahoo 12 teamer tomorrow. But I think because of the early starts of the season, they didn't have a lot of offerings for between the 20th and today. So I was trying to do like a roto time slot that made sense at night, and they had nothing in the price ranges that I wanted to play. Like I would have gone up to 250, or I would have gone down to 50 just to do something extra, you know. And there's like they're all at 8 a.m. or 11. So I only did my one home league. Unfortunately, it's gonna be the first time in like since I started playing fantasy baseball, I don't have a public roto league on Yahoo, which is gonna be a little weird, but. I'll try to go back to it next year if
yeah, for sure.
They have a time that works, you know.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. It's interesting because, yeah, I was kind of getting weirded out by the OCs because I have a weird schedule, you know, with the daughter and, you know, trying to do all that kind of stuff. And so, like, certain evenings I'm just out of SOL, like you know, I've recorded Bloom twice a week. It's just schedule's getting tighter on filling it in. So I was trying to do daytime ones, and Sundays didn't fill, and then Mondays didn't fill. I kept getting emails back, like, we're canceling this draft. I'm sitting there. Are we going to be able to get this thing going here, people? And then, you know, sure enough, they came through on Tuesday. But this draft season did feel a little weird in that respect. But it was fun. It's over. I digress. Now it means it's serious. We got to start setting lineups and doing the dance. So let's talk about some recent news here. And the big news, there's a lot of big news, actually, weirdly enough, injury-wise over the last few days. But the big one that dropped on Tuesday is Dylan Carlson, who collided with Jordan Walker on Monday, left with a shoulder injury, pretty serious shoulder injury, looks like, at least for the time being. So Victor Scott is the beneficiary, getting called up, going to start in center field for the Cardinals to start the season. A lot of people spent money on him this past week. A lot of people drafted Victor Scott. He still might be available in some leagues. What are your thoughts on Victor Scott? Because if anybody goes on Twitter, it's the next Estuary Ruiz, or you really, really love him. There's no in between. So how are you on Victor Scott?
It's definitely different because so when you're taking Estuary Ruiz, you're building your team. When you're taking Victor Scott right now, you're supplementing your team. So it's not the same thing because Estuary had an ADP probably in the mid-100s, I think, more often than not. And So you're planning your team's construction around him. But with Victor Scott, even if you drafted him, he's probably a post 250, 300 pick, like a bench piece. And at that point, if you track your team like I do in terms of projections, you probably have a balance, or you probably have your team filled out already and like you have all your stats, and then you just have a high upside guy on your bench. But with that said, if you didn't draft Victor Scott and you have Fab coming up this Sunday and he's on your free agency list, then you have to decide, okay, do I want to drop a pretty penny to try to get him, or do you just say, hey, if I get lucky and I don't bid that much and no one else bids either, then I get him. But yeah, player-wise, he is basically Estuary, I think. And I remember looking at it earlier. I think Estuary was maybe a little bit better in the minors. And I saw some debate on Twitter today about the comparison of them, which is like what everyone's talking about right now, it seems like. And they were talking about how they fared in the minor leagues. That's all you can really go off right now. And I don't know, like Victor is 2 years younger than Estuary. Victor's 23, Estuary's 25. But Victor also has a lot less time in the minors, I think. Estuary was in the minors for like 5 years before he got called up or something like that. So he had a lot of seasoning. And also, too, with Victor, you don't know how long he's going to be in the majors because he's basically filling in for either Edman or Nootbaar. And depending on who gets back first, if they want Burleson in the outfield or they want Scott in the outfield, it's tough. I know some big names on Twitter, like Matt Modica, was tweeting about how he has him like in three of his mains, and Matt's a great player, so he knows what he's talking about probably. If you came out of your draft like I did in one of my main events a little short on steals to how you're projecting things, I get trying to get him. I would just be cautious about breaking the bank because it might not be he might not be around for long. And he's like in drafting holes, he's a great target, but it's a whole different story now because now he's actually up, and before he was just a flyer. So it's tricky. You got to really evaluate if you think you can afford to spend that much fab if you really need it. And you got to take that risk into account, I guess.
Yeah, there's a few things that really stood out to me that I 100% agree on. It's like I get the Estuary comps. Like you said, even if you look at their minor leagues, a lot of similarities, really. In reality, Victor Scott probably has a better batting average hit tool, but still doesn't have a ton of power. Maybe he develops into it. I'll believe that when I see it type thing. So that's kind of where the comp comes in because Victor Scott, maybe he leads off, but it looks like probably towards the bottom, most likely. So now you got a guy with a good average. Run production is going to be sketch, not a ton of power, but a bunch of steals, which, so there's where you get your Estuary Ruiz comp. Like, that's pretty much what it comes down to. But the biggest thing that you said to me that I've been kind of like harping on in my brains, I haven't really put pen to paper to it yet or anything, is Nubar's coming back sooner than people think, it feels like. He's already started to take hacks. Like, he's got a rib injury, two I believe cracked ribs from a collision. So those, just once they heal, then you rehab, you're back. Like, there's no set timetable for ribs healing. It's just a thing. But he's apparently already starting to do baseball stuff. So that would make you think he's like, what, 3 weeks away, maybe, give or take, maybe a month. Okay, a month of Scott could be fun. No knocking that. Edmund, there's no timetable yet. He's still not even swinging a bat because of the wrist. So he might, I think he's lost cause at the moment. We'll see. But yeah, Nubar comes back sooner than people think. There's where it's tough to spend all that money on Victor Scott. Flip side, if Victor Scott goes out and becomes a baller, well, Burleson, maybe you go bye-bye type situation. Like, so Scott can play his way into more playing time. So if you love Scott, go do your dance. I'm just worried it's a short-term thing like Ben's talking about. That's my biggest concern. So we'll see. We'll be fun. Next week recapping that price to see where he went on whatever. Because he was drafted in a lot of leagues, or he was actually fab this last weekend, because I tweeted about it yesterday when the injury took place, when the collision took place. We didn't know the extent to Carlson's injury. I'm like, oh, look at all these guys that I saw spend big money on this past week, and I didn't understand why they're going to luck into this all of a sudden when they like to spend less, honestly. But we'll see how that plays out. All right, a couple little other bits of news here. We'll start with a positive thing after that. Jared Jones of the Pittsburgh Pirates, he was a popular name this spring through 16 and two-thirds innings, struck out 15 and allowed zero earned runs in the spring training, which is very good. Hasn't pitched out of the minors yet. This will be his big league debut, but he makes the Pirates. What's your thoughts on Jared Jones, who, again, drafted in a lot of leagues, picked up in a lot of leagues, but still could be available?
Yeah, he was someone I never really looked into too much. I just knew, because he kind of, like, it happened late in spring training that he was maybe going to make the team. But I pulled up his minor league stats right now, and he had kind of a whip problem, which I feel like is never something you can really bank on getting better when someone gets called up to the majors. He had good K rate, well more than a strikeout per inning in the minors. So I think that's where the appeal is. The Pirates should be okay, so maybe he'll have some decent run support. Some people like him, like the Pirates, for a surprise team this year, which I can see the argument for that. But yeah, so he definitely has the workload, which is good. He has at least 120 innings last two seasons, so he could essentially pitch the full year as long as he performs. So I get the appeal, and after seeing how all the prospect pitchers did last year, I can see why someone would be excited to take a chance on Jones. I didn't get him in any of my main events, which were my most recent drafts, unfortunately. But yeah, I think he's definitely a good target if you're still drafting or if you want to add someone off free agency.
Yeah, I almost got him on my OC on Tuesday morning. Just didn't pan out, but I could see the appeal because the thing you mentioned, 126 and two-thirds, I believe, innings last year in the minors. So there's no reason you couldn't see 150 this year, and that goes a long, long ways with pitchers these days. So a guy I'd definitely be interested in if he's on your waiver wire this weekend, put some shekels towards Jared Jones. A couple other little tidbits here. Paul Sewald obviously got grade 2 oblique injury. This is pretty dreadful stuff because Johan Duran is down with an oblique injury. I couldn't find the grade of his anywhere last night when I was looking for it. But he was out basically, it looks like, 1 to 2 months. Soft tissue injuries take different times to heal. I'd imagine Paul Sewald's out at least 2 months would be my hunch, at least 2 months. So how are you approaching this? Because I wrote about it in my daily news thing, but I want to hear your stance because it's kind of up in the air with the D-backs closing situation.
I think Ginkle's the ad. I think their situation is clearer than like the Twins, because now I'm hearing today or recently that Brock Stewart might be the one to get some save chances for the Twins. So it's not like, so we were thinking Griffin Jacks would be the fill-in for Duran, but that may not be the case. He might be the higher leverage guy still, as he probably would be when Duran was there. But with Sewald, so if you're still drafting, so for me, if anyone was hurt to start the year, I basically cross them off my list during the main events, because I've dealt with the injury stashes before and they've taken too long. So I wanted to avoid that this year. So if you're drafting right later tonight or tomorrow, I personally, if it was me, I wouldn't draft Seawald. I would look for another closer in that range. And unfortunately, what happens, like with the main event, because I'm sure OCs were the same, but the closers got pushed up even more because we've lost so many. And it's just really annoying because we had so many. Like there were 20 closers I would be fine with drafting as my closer one in DC season, and now it's probably like 12 if I were to recount all the injuries. But yeah, so if you have Seawald, I think we have a question about this eventually too, but I think Ginkle's a good target.
Yep, Ginkle seems to be the one. Yeah, Ginkle seems to be the guy. That's who I'd be looking at. But I'm a little scared about it because last year when they had their issues in the back of that bullpen, it was Ginkle, it was McGuff, it was Mantiply. They wouldn't just give one dude the job until they traded for Seawald, basically. So I guess we'll kind of have to see how that one takes place. But Seawald would be the dude for the time being. Other news, Brian Wu, shoulder inflammation, going to miss the start of the season for the Seattle Mariners. Wu dealt with shoulder issues off and on at the end of last season. Now he's got the shoulder inflammation out the gate. Here he's going to be shut down. Reminds me a lot of Yuri Perez a few weeks ago, similar situation. If it's that, I guess we're best case scenario, but how are you viewing this Brian Wu situation? And Emerson Hancock is coming to take his spot in the rotation.
Yeah, it's not good when he had the injury last year, Wu, and now he's dealing with it again. So that's something you never want to see. And his ADP got really pushed up in the main events for sure. He was someone I was fortunate enough I didn't get. Like, I was okay with him. I ended up moving him up from where I initially had him ranked after hearing people be in on him. But yeah, it stinks. And I was listening to your first pitch pod talking about Hancock getting crushed in spring training. And but he was a big prospect last year when he got called up. Like, people were looking to add him. So I could. What you said, you're basically like, just watch and see, or if you just don't spend too much fab on getting Hancock, but definitely a good situation. The Mariners always do well with their starters, so I could see why you'd want to take a flyer. Like, I drafted Johnny Brito in all three main events, so I'm looking for a bench starter to replace him, so I might take a chance on Hancock myself.
Yeah, in deeper formats, I can see more of the appeal in 12s. He's more of a streamer for me. He scuffled at times, even when he came up last year, but he does have that quote-unquote, what everyone loves to hear, prospect pedigree. So maybe, you know, he figures it out. He's getting older. He's still super young. So there's a lot of room for growth in this scenario. Spring just wasn't very reassuring. But again, he's going to be the fifth man in the rotation. Very good rotation. So it feels like a longer leash than last year. He got called up last year. It's kind of if you can't prove it, you're going back down type thing. Here, I'm imagining he's staying up until Wu gets back, no matter what. So does kind of enhance things a little bit there. All right, that'll be the main news and notes from the last, day or two. I'm not going to cover everything over the weekend, but that'll get us caught up on the big ones. It was a bad end to Monday with just a slew of injuries taking place right there. Let's get into Fab, though. Let's have a little fun here. It's the first week of this. For those that are new to the system we play here at the show, we look at the ad drops in FBC, 12-team OCs, because most people play 10 and 12 team leagues in general. So we try to keep it to the 12s, but Ben plays 15s. Curlin, who's on a lot, plays 15s. So they can always add their 15 feel to it if they so choose, which is nice. And just so you know, it's always hilarious that the variance in pricing in 12s is just bonkers. And you'll get annoyed from me saying wild, wild west probably by the end of the season. But week one is a really crazy one, Ben, and not so much in mains. It will have some, but since people have been drafting OCs since early February, there's a lot of drafts where there is different players on the waiver wire and different needs, because if you drafted early, you probably have 300 guys now, but there are 70 guys that are now interesting that are available. It's like it's a whole yin and a yang world we live in. So let's start at the top here. And you just mentioned Brock Stewart, which makes this even kind of goofier to me, especially when you see a price. Griffin Jacks was the most added player in 12-team OCs this past week. He was added in 278 online championships, not all of them, because obviously there's still some drafting, and some people took him after the Duran news. 278 leagues for as high as $417. Folks, that's almost half of your budget. And Duran will come back this year. We can all agree that was goofy. But let's just have fun with this. What are your thoughts on Griffin Jacks outside of now hearing this Brock Stewart news, which I had not seen yet, and that's a bummer to me because I do like Griffin Jacks.
No, I do too. I actually have him in two draft champions. So it was good to see that I did have him a couple teams. I mean, you never want to see anybody hurt, but that's why you draft those backup relievers. And yeah, so I that 417 must have been someone who had a Duran.
It better be someone that had Duran. Otherwise, it's a real interest. I've always said I'd love to just have like names because I'd like to get people to, like, come. Like, I'd have a separate show. Just come on and talk for a few minutes with your process. I just want to hear your process.
Yeah, well, it'll probably be a learning experience for whoever it was, hopefully. And they don't make the same mistake again. Cause yeah, you don't want to bid half of your fab before the season even starts, really. And I mean, he's a great pitcher. He went to Driveline. So he could even be better than he was last year, Jax. But yeah, I feel like less than 100 or like 100 at the max would have been a safer bid. And that's like from the 15 team mindset, like you were mentioning before. And a 12, I'd probably knock it down a little bit more, but everyone's got a full fab budget, so they want to spend their money and get their guys, early rather than late.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I love Jax. For like years, last two or three years, he's been a focus of mine in DCs. So, yeah, I'll be okay with this situation. I didn't get him anywhere. I had somebody in the Substack ask me like a question on him. I said, I'm only going like in 12s. I'm only going like $48, and I probably won't get him. That's what I tell people. Obviously, he went as low as $3 in some, so that would have worked elsewhere. I will double check our wins for the week, but I'm pretty sure I didn't get Griffin Jacks anywhere this week. Love the move. I thought out of the available potential closers that are on the market, because we'll talk about some more here, to me, he was the best one to add. Obviously, that was before the Brock Stewart news, but I thought Jacks would have been the one over the three-headed monster in Milwaukee and a couple other situations. The Arizona one took place after the fact, so you're pretty much focused on those, and I was quite interested in Griffin Jacks. All right, let's talk about a starting pitcher now, New York Yankees, your backyard. Luis Eel, for those keeping track, or Heel, for those keeping track at home, it's G-I-L, but you pronounce it Heel. 249 leagues, as high as 158, as low as a dollar. Going to be the fifth starter for the New York Yankees. Had a heck of a spring. And we've actually seen signs of it from time to time when he's been called up. Like, strikeouts are good, but overall production's sketchy. So what's your thoughts on Luis coming up? Has a spot in the rotation, at least until Cole comes back. So how are we feeling about this?
Definitely a good flyer to take. And I believe so. The bidding was definitely better than Jax. He could potentially be an even more valuable player than Jax, and he went for less money, it seems. I mean, we don't know the distribution of the bids, but based on the max, he was a lot cheaper option. Yeah. But saves are tough to come by, so I get it. The thing with Jax too, kind of like with Victor Scott, is the uncertain time he'll be up in the majors. But when you look at the Yankees rotation, they play injury risks. Cole's already hurt. Cortez is coming back from a shoulder injury. Rodon can't stay healthy. So there's a chance he could stay up in a difference for different people the entire season. The minor league website keeps putting this ad in front of me. I can't see his minor league stats. But so we had a question about him. So he hasn't pitched much the last couple of years. So that's the one concern.
That was my biggest question for you, because you actually pay attention to the Yankees. I was wondering about that.
Yeah, so his major league stats when he was called up, they're pretty solid. Like a 3.78 ERA in seven games started. So he's been pretty – so in his original cup of coffee in the majors, he's been fine. So I could see the appeal. Should get a good win potential pitching for the Yankees. He's someone I didn't really get too aggressive for in FAB, mainly because I just want to see how my team perform. Like, I didn't have any glaring pitching holes really in the teams that I could make ads in when FAB ran. But yeah, I think he's a good good flyer to take, and I'll be looking forward to seeing how he pitches, see how like the improvements that he's made, because I haven't really been following spring training too much. If I'm being honest, I try to watch it when I can, but I don't like take too much at, I don't get too invested into it, but I did hear how he was doing, and I look forward to seeing how he pitches come Thursday or whenever he starts.
Yeah, that's the trickiest part. A part you mentioned there is a lot of the heavy bids I'd hope are people that had injuries that took place for their team, because if you like most of my bigger drafts, my OCs were closer to this FAB period, so on paper I shouldn't have a lot of moves to make, no matter even if things changed. On paper, it's tough to really make those decisions. Like, do I drop a guy I drafted because I wanted to start him week one, like, for Luis Eel, who won't start till week two? Those kind of scenarios. Like, what are we doing here? So that's kind of a dilemma. I'd have to go back and look and see if I did get him or not. But For me, he would have been more involved in my earlier drafts per se. But yeah, I like the upside. I'm just curious how many innings we get out of Eli. That's my biggest question mark when it comes to him. All right, Mr. Free Look himself, Daniel Hudson, who has a win in Korea. And if you start him on Thursday, you get that win in Korea. Was added in 238 leagues, as high as $78 and as low as a dollar. I did not even try because I was not going to contend. I guess I should have with the he was my contingent, but his waterfall where Daniel came into play. Were you trying to get that free win from Daniel Hudson?
So going into my main events, I did have him written down on a sheet that I had with me, but everyone else seemed to be a little more into that win than I was. He was going in mid to early 300s in the main event in the leagues that I was in, and I just wasn't ready to take a relief pitcher for a win at that point. Because you're still trying to build the court. You're finishing out your starting lineup at that point. But when it comes to Fab, it's reasonable enough. I mean, I don't know if I would want to spend $50 or whatever the max was for a win just for the start. I know how valuable wins are. I understand bidding like $10 for him. I could see myself doing that. But yeah, in my main events, people are very aggressive drafting him. I thought I would have waited past pick 400 probably to take him, but I don't know. I was trying to see the long game more than that free look.
That was my problem. Like on my Tuesday morning OC, I think he was like around 26 or 27. And I was like, no. Like I had him in my queue. He was there. But I'm like, no, that's just not happening for me. I'm sorry. Like you said, wins are nice and all. But I guess the more I think about it, I think I heard Jeff Erickson talking about it with like Gratterall out. Like even this week, he could be that guy in line behind Phillips. And who knows? But man, it's just. There's a lot of what ifs involved there and some other guys I felt better about. So could be my loss. We'll see. But I'm with you. It was tough for me to spend a ton of money just for a win, even though wins are important. It still was tricky to do that, knowing how important those extra dollars are later in the season.
But to Jeff's point, I did hear him say that too. So when I was just doing my prep and like looking at players again, I looked at Phillips. And because I had him last year in one of my main events, and it was, I don't know if you remember, but it was the main where I ended up punting saves. He was one of my closers. And he wasn't getting enough saves. So I looked back at the Dodgers team stats from last year. He had fewer than half of the save chances for the Dodgers last year.
That's crazy.
So if you have Phillips, I mean, I wouldn't want to start two Dodgers relievers on the same team, but in a weekly setting, you know, but like Phillips isn't guaranteed to have full reign of all the saves going forward. So there's some value in having Hudson. Like if you want to plug him in, like if you don't have good matchups for your starters, I could see having him on your bench. So it may not just be an ad for this week. There could be more value in the season as it goes on. So I just wanted to throw that in there because Phillips, he had a huge jump in the main event ADP. I'm not sure how OCs looked after he got that save, but he was like a little more in the bottom half of that 20 I was talking about before for the closers that I wanted as my RP1, just because like the way the Dodgers used him last year, and nothing really changed, and they could always go and trade for someone too. So this a little tangent, but I felt like it was related to bring up with Hudson.
Yeah, no, I got him on the 5-6 turn today. I went closer on the 5-6 turn because most of those kind of, you know, you said 12 relievers or so, most of them were gone by that point. Like they were pushed up so high. That might have been my first Evan Phillips share of draft season, but I'm like, okay, I'll get him, hope for 20 to 25 saves and start penciling things in around it because it dropped off tremendously after that. And I'm like, I could have gone Alexis Diaz and his like ratio nightmare or Evan Phillips. I'm like, okay, I'll take Evan Phillips, who when he's on the mound, strikeouts, good ratios, I'll work with it and then try to piece it together later and not let Alexis Diaz do his thing. That was where I was at, because I'll have to double check. My first share of Evan Phillips was my last draft, which sounds
well. Now right. It makes more sense because there's so many closers who are hurt. Yes. So like it pushes his value up. But like when everyone's healthy, he was definitely near the back end of like Clay Holmes range, you know, yes, and Kimbrel. Like it was more of a debate with those guys because they would probably get all the save chances. But yep. Different story now.
Yep, 100% on that one. I'm going to group the three Milwaukee potential closers together. You have Joel Piamps added in 176 leagues, as high as 374, as low as a dollar. You have Abner Uribe, 141 leagues, as high as 150, as low as a dollar. And Trevor McGill, 135 leagues, as high as 351, as low as a dollar. So McGill went for as high as 351. Uribe went as high as 150. and Pi Amps went as high as 374. So if you just pull the audience here, Pi Amps has a sharp, small lead over Trevor Miguel, and then there's Abner Uribe. How do you see the Milwaukee situation playing out, and how would you have approached it in Fab?
Yes, yeah, this is tricky. So I usually follow Closer Monkey, the website, yep, for my reliever news, and they actually were just absorbed by Greg Jewett. So now it's Greg Jewett's site, so I'm looking at Greg Jewett's stuff, and they have Pi Amps leading the committee right now, followed by Uribe and McGill. I think from what I heard, McGill might have the best stuff with Uribe, because I think McGill had a really good swing strike rate last year, like maybe 17% from if I recall correctly. And like Uribe was one of those DC guys that I have him on one of my DCs, actually. Abner Uribe as like a flyer in case they traded Devin, but said Devin's hurt now. Pi Amps, I think I may have seen something where they kind of want him to be what I was alluding to, what Griffin Jacks may be, like the fireman, or just whenever they need him. He's probably their most trusted reliever of the three, because Uribe is kind of young and he's a little wild. So I'd rather go after like the Toronto situation probably, or even the Twin situation. I'd rather go after than this one right now. That's a lot of money to spend on someone, on all those guys that is, you're not really sure who's going to actually get the first save chance.
Yeah. I feel it's Pi Amps, but I'm not nearly as comfortable like the way I like Jack so much. Like I thought Pi Amps, the experience, he'll get the run, but it reminded me of when Corbin Young helped preview the Mariners 2 years ago for me. And I was asking about Paul Sewald and Andres Munoz, how are we doing this? And he says, the way the Mariners utilize these guys is if it's just like a casual, we just need to get the save in the ninth, Sewald's the dude. If we need to throw it by guys, they bring Munoz in. And it feels like Milwaukee could have a similar situation on their hands, because between Uribe and McGill, you got more of the strikeout guys, where Pi Amps is more of, he can get his strikeouts, but he might, you know, give up a little more contact at the same time. So kind of see where it goes. I don't know. Like I put bids in. I got a couple Pi Amps shares. I only put $24 out. Like I wasn't going crazy. I was being light bidding. I think I put like $15 on the other two guys, didn't get either of them. So it just goes to show you 12s in a nutshell. But I wasn't aggressive on any potential closers this week. And I got Pi Amps. We'll roll them out there for a bit, see how it goes, and probably drop them soon if he doesn't get the roll. So we'll see. All right. This is a fun one, though. And this is one that there's a few pitchers. Like I was happy when AJ Puck was a closer at one point. Michael Kopech is going to the bullpen. And I've been saying for at least a year now, the dude's nasty. He just can't last more than a couple innings, because then it just all goes off the cliff. So closing might make sense for Kopech. Now, the White Sox have not said Kopech's the closer. The White Sox might win 15 games this year, so does it really matter if Kopech's the closer? But Michael Kopech going to the bullpen is intriguing, and other people have the same mindset that I do. He was adding 163 leagues, as high as $170, as low as a dollar, and it makes sense when you have Leisure back there, who people like, but you know, who is Leisure? I didn't hear about him. I didn't even know about him until 3 weeks ago. They signed Brebbia, who I liked as a reliever for the Giants. Should he be a full-time closer? Probably not. But he's one of those guys that could fill. Like, he's a good Daniel Hudson. That's who Brebbia is. Maybe it's not a full-time dude. So Kopech would make sense to me. What are your thoughts on this Michael Kopech deal? Am I just out of my mind, and so were the other 170 or so people? Or do you see this being a thing?
No, I think he definitely has a good shot of being the closer for the White Sox. I've been hearing all about Kopech from Curlin the last couple of days, because he's been all in on him. I think Mike's done drafting, so I can say that.
Yes,
but he thinks he is. So yes. He does like another three leagues tomorrow or something.
Well said.
So the thing with Kopech is, so I'll start with a 15 mindset. So I like to have two closers and 15s. There's 30 teams divided by two. There's 15 teams in the league. Everyone gets two closers. And from last year, chasing saves in the main event in a couple instances, it's not like I added Gregory Santos, the former White Sox closer, and there'd be like 2 weeks in a row with you get zero saves. And the White Sox aren't any better than they were last year. They're probably worse. So that's the first thing against Kopech for me. But in a 12 teamer where you could potentially have three closers starting on your team, I get it, because he could potentially be really good. He could help you out with the strikeouts. moderate strikeouts, ERA and WHIP potentially if he can get comfortable as a reliever. And then you're getting supplementary saves with your other two relievers. But in a 15, I didn't want to wait on my RP2 to hope to get Kopech as my RP2, as hoping he can get the role. Because I don't, if he does get the role, I don't think he's going to be as valuable, or he won't be as helpful to my save totals just because of how bad the White Sox are. So that's why I wasn't as in on him. But like I said, I was drafting 15s. Yep. And, but like if you had to add him in this case and you, something happened, like you had Griffin, you had a Yoan Duran or Paul Sewald, but he got hurt after Fab ran. Yep. If you had an injured closer, I can get why you would add Kopech, but in terms of targeting him, like in a draft, I was trying to avoid the White Sox closer if I could.
Yeah, I get it. I took him as my fourth reliever in my draft today.
Yeah, not even
like,
third.
it was Jackson Kopech were my third and fourth. Like, let's just see where the dust lies when that's all said and done.
Yep.
That was where that strategy came from. I'm with you. Was not going to be my closer too. That's for darn sure. Like, but especially in 12s also, is you need more saves in 12s and 15s. So if like 15 Kopech saves, if you can strike guys out with ratios, okay, there's a world where that makes sense. More in 12s probably than 15s. But yeah, fun stuff there. I think this might be our last main closer discussion here. Jimmy Garcia added in 142 leagues, as high as 185, as low as a dollar, with Romano starting on the IL, Swanson starting on the IL, probably 3 to 4 weeks before the return. I'd imagine people are getting optimistic because they're playing catch. Let's remember, they got to stretch out and get ready to pitch again. So I would guess you get at least a month in Toronto with the closer. But it felt like it was Jimmy's job the whole time. And then reports come out on Monday that, oh, there's Pearson and there's this and there's that. And like, it's an open world. So I don't know what's going on in Toronto. So how are you approaching the Toronto situation?
So I will say he is someone I did draft in one of my main events, Jimmy. I took Kyle Finnegan as my RP2. I decided to wait a little bit in that one. And it was near the end of the draft and the other Flyers had gone, the guys we've mentioned before. I'm like, well, it doesn't sound good for Romano or Swanson, so why not? And I'll at least start him for the short week. If I probably won't have a full rotation of starters anyways and see what happens. And like you mentioned with the prices, he was much more affordable than the other closer specs. So I could see the appeal of going. And I feel like the path for him before the news came out was a lot more open because the two guys were both hurt ahead of him. So it made more sense to wait and target Garcia in that main event. But yeah, I think whoever the bidders on Garcia made out better than the other, at least the Brewers guys potentially. I mean, someone's going to get right probably on one of the three, but Garcia was a little more appealing, I think.
Yep, I'm kind of with you on that one. Just crazy watching all the closer turnover already. It's bonkers, but I guess I'll throw this out there and tell me if you would do it differently. Tell me if I'm wrong. Total transparency is fine. So we see how Minnesota, Toronto, Milwaukee, guess you could say the White Sox in a roundabout way, how their closing situation was approached this week. When we're looking at Fab this week and then we got Arizona now, do you utilize these price points to get an idea on what Ginkle might go for? That's kind of where I'm looking at it. If people are going to spend this kind of money on these closers, that might be the urge. Or do you, like, in a perfect world, I told you I didn't spend a lot of money. You weren't spending a lot of money. So we're probably not changing our philosophy in that regards. But for the listeners, if say they need Kevin Ginkle, is this something you would use as a kind of a blueprint?
I think so. But I mean, in the end, you still should bid what you want to bid because I guess if you want to get Ginkle at no cost, and this is really helpful because then you can be like, okay, this is what I need to bid to get him if you have Sewald. But if you're just someone who wants to be like, okay, yeah, I could use a third closer or I can afford to not get Ginkle, then it doesn't really affect that person, I don't think. But yeah, it's definitely useful if you're someone who the mindset is I need to get him. And so yeah, that's a good question. I think you could definitely use the Fab results. But the one thing though is unless there's another injury and knock on wood doesn't happen, true, he's going to be the only guy presumably going into next week.
Yeah.
So everyone might have their focus turned to Ginkle now, as opposed to
be the higher end of bidding, if that's the case.
Yeah, you don't have four situations; you just have one now, so it's going to be a little more contested. But that's, I don't know.
Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope it doesn't happen. But yeah. All right, let's go back to the starting pitchers here. We already talked about Luis Eel. We got a few more young guns to talk about here. Garrett Crochet being one of them, out of nowhere, starting, making his first career start on opening day. Ninth pitcher in history to do this, well, over the last 140 years, obviously. First year, everyone started their first game. That's how it works. But it's interesting to me because you got Crochet, who in 2023 between AAA and the Bigs, and double A through 24 innings, didn't pitch in 2022, through 54 innings in 2021. Now he's going to be a starter this year at his age 25 season. Garrett Crochet was added in 138 leagues for as high as $511. So besides that being insane, what are your thoughts on Garrett Crochet?
So, well, the Kopech argument applies. It's the White Sox, and they're probably not going to give him a lot of run support. I mean, the top of the lineup's pretty good. But, yeah, I mean, he hasn't started in forever, so
He's never started. This is his first career start.
Yeah, well, yeah, so there you go. Maybe, like, in college he started. But who knows how long ago that was. Yeah, I in drafts, I could have targeted Crochet, and I didn't want to because it's like the Hicks thing with me and whoever else, like Ronaldo Lopez. There's a reason these guys went to the bullpen originally. They couldn't really cut it as a starter. And, I mean, unless I'd rather just see the change happen before I try to blow half my fab on it or use a pick that could be towards something more valuable in my mind. But, yeah, hopefully it works out for whoever spent that much money on him.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they get the Tigers this weekend, so that part's kind of appealing, but not $511 appealing. So, no. Like, I think
poor person, if they're listening, they're probably like,
yeah. I think if they're listening to my fab reviews now, you know you're going to get critiqued if you spend that much money. That's just kind of one thing I'm going to do every single episode. So, again, welcome. You're welcome to jump on if it was you. If you can show proof, you're more than welcome to jump on.
Comment, add a comment to the show.
Yeah, but I drafted him on Tuesday. I think it was like around 25 or 27, right before or after Kopech. And it was strictly, I wanted him to face the Tigers, and I'm probably going to drop him at the end of the week. That was the whole purpose of that addition, which was most of my last drafts, like my last anywhere from 5 to 9 picks were focused on this weekend, we move on type scenario. So we'll see how that plays out. Casey Mize adding 130 leagues, as high as 218, as low as a dollar. Casey Mize, once highly, highly heralded prospect, battling injuries, made the Tigers rotation. I have zero shares of Casey Mize because with the injuries, I don't know what to expect from Casey Mize. But what are your thoughts on him?
I was surprised he made the rotation because I tweeted about it. I thought Matt Manning was going to be in it all along, he pitched. Yeah, I wasn't alone. Manning pitched really well, so I was surprised to see Mize. I mean, good for Mize. But a little Colin, my shot has a question, so I don't want to give too much away. But
okay, we can save it. He has. Told me to save it, but we'll save it. It's no worries.
Well, no, I'll say that I wasn't interested in Mize. I could see adding him in Fab if you needed a starter. It's just, I wouldn't count on him for a full season of work. I'll say
these prices are just amazing. That's all I know. I'm down. I was cool with putting bids in, and probably most of these guys, if you wanted to, but not even a. Nothing over $50 made sense to me, let alone what we're seeing now. This one was a little more intriguing. Still didn't win him, I don't think. Gavin Stone, 121 leagues, as high as 271, as low as $3. Stone made the rotation. He entered last year as like the next big thing for the Dodgers. AAA was rough. The bigs were rough. It just didn't pan out for Stone. But this spring has been outstanding. So it just could be a young pitcher, you know, finding it still. What's your thoughts on Gavin Stone?
He's probably the most appealing of the stars we've mentioned to me so far, is because he's going to pitch for the Dodgers. Good prospect, like you mentioned. But the thing with the Dodgers, though, is they have so many starters who are going to be back eventually. So he's definitely not going to stick around for long, Stone. And to spend a ton of money on him, I mean, you're just adding a rental, and you're hoping that he gets better than how he was when he first got called up. But for a reasonable price, I would have been interested in Stone for sure.
Yeah. I was definitely with you on Gavin Stone. Brock Stewart was added in 116 leagues. We talked about him a lot already. We've got a bat to talk about. We've got a bat. Colton Cowser added in 105 leagues, as high as 611, as low as $1.611, over half your money on a platoon outfielder for the Baltimore Orioles. I think it tells you everything about my opinion on this. Did hit tons of power, no denying that, but he's going to be platooning, folks. What's your thoughts on Colton Kelzer?
That's a good stab. If you had Garrett Mitchell get hurt like I did on at least one team, I can get it. Trade one platoon guy for another platoon guy. I'm not too familiar with Kowser's profile. Like if he's a speed guy, I think he is supposed to have power. Yes. But he's a lefty, so he doesn't have to worry about the deep left field in Baltimore. So that's good. His power could play there. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't spend that much money on him, of course. Like it's been the theme of the show so far. But yeah, I could see taking a flyer maybe, but I think he's more of a 15 team play than a 12.
Okay, let's have fun with this. I just flipped the script because we don't need to. We've talked about enough guys and more. It's just now more making fun of things. And here's one to make fun of. So I just flicked over to the men bids. $102 men, $102 max, one bid. Someone added Pablo Sandoval. Must have meant Patrick, I'm guessing. That one will sting a little bit, folks. And this is also to show you to maybe go check your waiver wire, because there might be some names out there, so you haven't done Fab yet. I know like Tout Wars runs Fab on Wednesday. Nathaniel Lowe was out there in two leagues. He's injured, but you could get him kind of, he went for as high as 111, as low as 90. Kode Senga got added in two leagues. Brandon Lau, JD Martinez was added in two leagues, as high as 250, as low as 69. AJ Puck's out there. He got added in 52 leagues. There's a bunch of guys like that, so I just wanted to bring that part up as – there's a handful of players that all of a sudden will have relevance, and that goes back to if you drafted super early, there'll be a lot of dudes out there. So just go check that out. Did you want to recap your Fab this week, or do we want to wait till next week? You can do it this week if you want, if you got it.
Yeah, it's just one ad. So in my OLAC, my 150 OLAC online auction championship, for those unaware, NFBC, I added Bowden Francis for $18, and I dropped Mason Black of the Giants for $14. So it was $18. Runner-up was $14 for Bowden dropping Black. So I was happy with that.
All right. I'll tell you my OC1, because OC2 and OC3 did not take place in time for Fab. I did get Griffin Jackson this league. My bad. I got him $48. Nice. Runner-up bid of $32. I dropped Chris Martin, who I like a lot, but I'm thinking guy that should be closing, guy that might be closing, 12-team league. Let's have some fun. Luis Eel, I got for $16. Runner-up of $3. Dropped David Robertson, who I do think ends the year with more saves in Texas than LeClerc, but again, 12-team league. Can't just have that sitting around on the bench for now. I probably should have kept him for his two innings probably this weekend, but different story. And then I added Aaron Hicks, dropped Brenton Doyle. That one's going to kind of sting with me a little bit. Doyle's having a decent spring, but I like what Hicks is doing as well. He's going to lead off for Anaheim. Top of the order is not bad, $3 to zero. 12s are a lot different than 15s, as Ben will attest when we do Fab back and forth. Brenton Doyle would never be a drop in a 15. But we can have some fun with that. You said your OLAC. Let me see what happened in mine. Okay, here we go. I'll tell you my OLAC one. Daniel Hudson was added for $29 in that league. I added Ramon Laureano, dropped Matt Manning, 12-3. I think Manning will be back, but can't hold him for now. Laureano, nice series against Oakland coming up, two lefties, two righties. Then I added Aaron Hicks in that league, dropped Steven Matz as well. I don't think I need to give you guys all of my leagues because we'll be here all day, but I'll do my OCs and my OLACs each week to kind of keep track with what we got going on.
Any action in the listener leagues?
Oh, yeah, I can give them to you if you want. Yeah,
let's do it. I was just curious if like people made some.
We might have some goofy ones here now you mentioned it. Griffin, I had two listener leagues. So in my first one, Marty, love Marty, amazingly. He's been with me from way back in the day from Quick Hits and everything. He had a Griffin Jacks, dropped Orion Kirkering, 147-48. SoCal Hardball, I think that's Jeff. He added Victor Scott, dropped Joey Weimer, 77-11. That could be pretty cheap come this Sunday.
Wow, that's a good ad.
Yep, that's one that then Colton Kowser. See, Colton, this is why our listeners are smart. Like Luis Eel, $51. Okay. Colton Kowser, $37. Joel Piatt's, $23. Like Garrett Crochet, $21. Yeah. Abner Uribe, $28. Like, look at these people. I did get Daniel Hudson's win in this one, 13-7. Got Aaron Hicks in this one. I got Kyle Isbell, Brian Rocchio, because I needed a middle infielder because Jordan Lawler didn't make the team. Yeah, this one, there's a lot of ad drops because we drafted it in March or February. Let's see what listener league two of mine. I don't know. I could check Bloomfield's technically if we wanted to, but I'll leave that for him. This one got a little wilder. Piamps for 122, Griffin Jacks for 107. But then it calms down, like Eel at 64, Mize at 45, Kowser at 40. I got Crochet in this one for 18, Hicks for 17, Laureano for 12, Moncada for 6 with a tied bid of 6, which makes me just melt my heart because I get so much crap for my Moncada love, but I needed a corner infielder in that league due to injuries, so Moncada came one down. But yeah, it was good to see the listeners actually didn't go completely bonkers like some of the other ones did. Which is
I feel like I have to feel like a proud parent right now.
Yeah, I do. When I see that kind of stuff, God, this is great. Let's see what you guys do this weekend with Ginkle. Do me proud, folks. Don't screw it up. All right. Real quick.
Fire off bold predictions,
and then we'll do listener questions. So let's go back and forth. Do you have them? Did you write them how you would rank them, or just five in general?
No,
it doesn't matter.
I just have five in general, I guess. Okay, I have four positives, one negative. Yep,
let's go down the list then. What's your first bold prediction?
All right, I'll get the negative one out of the way. I don't really feel too strongly about this. I feel like it's a good one to say, though. And I think Yoshinobu Yamamoto finishes outside the top 50 starting pitchers.
Yep, that is totally reasonable. Not going to even comment any farther because I'm with you. This is stay on brand, everybody. Logan Ohapi is the catcher one at the end of the season. I was Oliver William Contreras last year. Forget catcher one. And you don't have to have all the steals. Like he had 6 steals, 17 homers at .289. I think Ohapi can hit .265 to .270 with probably 25 to 30 home runs, maybe a couple steals, more RBIs than that. So, yeah, I got Ohapi as the catcher one next year.
I like that one.
What's your all second right. one?
So this one is interesting, probably, but I'm saying Jake Cronenworth finishes inside the top 150.
I like that.
He's going to be batting in between Manny and Tatis at the top of that lineup. He's done it before, and I think he's getting slept on as a multi-position eligible guy. And I'm not saying that just because of how he did in Korea, but I think the potential's there. It kind of like opened my eyes to him as a possibility of being a good profit pick.
Yep, I'm with you. I was mad when I actually kind of when he got taken before me. I was trying to play chicken and lost.
So, oh yeah, I wanted my main last night, and I was mad at pick like whatever the pick was. I'm like, I'm mad at Jake that corner just got picked ahead of me. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, it was like round 24 or something. I'm like, yeah. I guess how do you get mad around 24? You could have taken him before this, but it's like you're trying to play the game and it backfired. Yeah. My number two is Seiya Suzuki. You guys will get a trend here. There's a lot of my guys that are on this list. Seiya Suzuki. I'm going to predict a stat line of .280. 30 homers, 20 steals, and 200-plus runs in RBIs combined in a top-five MVP finish for Seiya Suzuki.
Sounds good to me.
All right, what's your next one?
So one of my guys this year has been Mason Winn, and I am boldly predicting that Mason Winn is the 2023 C.J. Abrams light.
Nice.
Prospect being slept on. I was looking at their minor league stats earlier. I know we're supposed to be going quick, but I think in Abrams' career, he's 114 games in the minors, 12 homers, 42 steals. When did that in a season in the minors? So with a little lower average, but that's why I said Abrams light. I think he's going later than Abrams was last year. The Cardinals are going to give him a full run at playing shortstop. He's a late speed, which was something I was chasing a lot in drafts just because – It's easier to catch up with speed on the waiver wire, but I think Wynn's getting slept on because he's a good prospect.
Yeah, no, my round 30 pick today. It was between Wynn and I don't know who I ended up picking, but I kept going Wynn. I'm like, I already got two shortstops. Do I need a third? So yeah, we'll see. I might end up adding him again because I was really close to drafting him. But my middle infielder, my second shortstop, is my third bold prediction, and that's Ezekiel Tovar, who I'm very, very excited about this year. I have him hitting 20 homers and stealing 30 bases. And I think he finishes the year as a top 100 overall player and a top 10 shortstop after this season. So Ezekiel Tovar is a guy I'm very, very high on as well.
Nice.
Who's your fourth one?
Nick Lodolo is drafted as a top 20 starter in 2025.
Nice. That's fun. I'll say Sedane Rafaela. Again, I liked him before he got the job, for those keeping track at home. Now that he has the job, I think eventually he'll be leading off when Duran gets traded or something happens. But I got this is where I might have got too bold, but I haven't been going 20-40 this year, full season, 40 steals, 20 homers. I think he's a top 20 outfielder by the end of the season and another top 100 player for Sedane Rafaela, a guy who's been free in drafts pretty much all draft season.
Very nice.
Who is your fifth one?
So this is a Mike Curlin, favorite. He got me onto him. I know you're a fan of his now. But my last prediction is that Mikel Garcia's 5x5 line is Ha-Sung Kim's 2023 5x5 line.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yep. Yeah, the only thing I was like, I almost did a Mikel Garcia one also. So that's funny. Like, I was really close. And yeah, the person I did do, you'll see why they're very similar players in my mind. But yeah, Garcia, the only thing I was worried about is how many homers could I project him for? I almost said like a 2050 season. This is what I was thinking like Mikel could do, which would be bonkers. But yeah, I like that call a lot.
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to cover him as one of my bold predictions. I didn't know what the prediction would be, though. And then I was looking at his though. Well, yeah, so I was looking at his Statcast. So if you've looked at his page, anyone listening or you, Bubba, there's a lot of red on it. The only thing that hurts him is the barrel rate. Mm-hmm. But when you look at his expected home runs for last year, it was 7, and he only had 4. But if he can increase that launch angle a little bit, and like he has the speed to steal 40 bases, he's gonna hit leadoff. I think he could do like 12 to 14 homers, 15 homers, which isn't far off from what Kim did last year. So
yeah. I like that call quite a bit. Yeah. My last one, again, we're gonna finish on brand here. The mascot of the Bubba and the Bloom show, Luis Rengifo, finishes 25-20 with 180 plus runs and RBIs as a leadoff hitter for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So Luis Rengifo is another monster season free in drafts.
Get out of the way, Rendon.
Yes, exactly. Just get out of the way. Very, very true. All right, let's give our listener questions here, as we had plenty of them, and thank you very much for all of those. Start with Taylor Johnson. If you drafted Sewald, how much fab would you go on Ginkle? Say the rest of your closers are late specs like Kinley, Chapman, McAllister, I think you meant MacArthur probably, and Kopech. So if you're pretty much already on your last leg on closers, how much would you go on Ginkle?
Yeah, so I kind of want to go in line with what I was saying before. And I wrote down in a 15, I'd probably go around 80 to 100. And then in a 12, slightly less, because he does have 1.5 closers right now with some other options potentially. But I guess, like I said, the league size matters, but I would be like up 80 to 100, maybe highest I would bid.
Yeah, if you really need them, you go closer to 100. If you're just using them as an extra reliever, I'm probably more like in my between my Piams and my Jack's World, probably 35, 40 bucks. That's just where I live.
So assuming $1,000 budget, too, I would make sure.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. So, yeah, I probably won't get Kevin Ginkle. Let's put it that way. But if you really need them, obviously, got to be a little more aggressive. Just don't go. Oh, I wouldn't go over 150. I'll say that much. Don't go freaking nuts, because there'll be many other Kevin Ginkles this season. Let's put it that way. The Guilds, this is a tongue-in-cheek question, but he says, who's your choice for NL Cy Young, Luis Severino or Jordan Hicks? I'll hang up and listen. It's Jordan Hicks, obviously. But I know you don't like – you're more of a Severino guy, I think.
Well, it's funny because I'm like, well, I either pick Bubba's side or I pick the Guild side because he's a Mets fan. I'm like, well – I have the Severino ties. It kind of goes back to the crochet argument. I think it's more likely that Severino is the better of the two because he has the starter experience and we've seen it before, but Hicks stuff is pretty nasty too. So
it's nasty. Some guy, Ryan Bloomfield, says, is Victor Scott the same as Ester Ruiz? And we covered that one earlier. Adam Warner, my friend, quote unquote, passed on Ohtani at pick 13 in main event for Aaron Judge, then again passed on Ohtani in the second for Corbin Burnes. Is this person, who is totally not me, going to rue this when Shohei goes 60-30? I think he's fine passing on Ohtani. But
yeah, well, he's not going to go 60-30, I'll say that. But yeah. My comment was no, because you didn't need Acuna to win the overall last year, like at least in the main event. I'm pretty sure Brian Slack and I forget his partner's name. I don't think they had Acuna on their team. So you don't need the best player to have the best team.
Yeah, on the Twitter, he's at The Arrival. That's his partner. I'm totally blanking on his name, too. That's totally my bad.
I feel bad because Brian got all the attention, and it was the two of them the whole time. And
Is it Dylan?
Yeah, Dylan something. I think he works for Pitcherlist or something.
He works for Baseball America.
Yeah, I knew he did something. Yeah, Dylan, I think, or something like that. I apologize.
Mask on, mask off 99. That's a heck of a name. Says starting Victor Scott over Leody on this short week. Are you starting Victor Scott this week?
This is a tough question. So I had to look in to see who they're playing. Scott has 4 versus the Dodgers, which is good and awful. Yeah. Tavares has 3 versus the Cubs, which is better and worse. So like Scott, cause it's been over a week that they're, he's getting, Scott's getting the Dodgers full like force. He's getting all everyone. So, but if he gets on base, he's probably going to steal. So I don't know. It's tough. I was not high on Tavares in draft season, but I don't know. Maybe I take the gamble on Scott's four games. Hopefully he starts all four. I mean, he could not, there's a chance he doesn't play all four, but
there's that, that little nugget too. I'd probably take the chance on Scott, but yeah, not ideal. Good comp, to be honest, like three with Tavares, who there shouldn't be a reason why he doesn't play all three, but it's, you know, Steele, Moniga. That's not fun in that situation where the Dodgers, well, he gets Yamamoto, which is cool. But then you got Glasnow. And the one thing I will say is most pitchers aren't going deep this first weekend. The Dodgers are one of the worst bullpens in baseball last year. I didn't see a ton of improvements this season. So if you want to try to play a weird angle, that would be it. But yeah, it's tough regardless. I'll take the four games, see what happens. Yeah. All right. Calling my shot says Casey Mize, Luis Eel, and Max Meyer have all pitched under 100 innings since 2021, minors, majors, and spring training combined. Where do you think the ceiling is for these guys innings-wise in 2024?
Want me to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So I estimated Mize for like 80, Heel for 100, and then Meyer for 100 to 120.
Yeah, I think I wrote down somewhere Meyer. I was thinking 120 the other day. Mize, I'm just – I don't know why they'd push him. Like, you've invested so much in him. He's like, you almost want to see it. Another reason why I thought he'd start in the minors. I'll still say 100 just because if he's starting this year, even with bullpen involved, he's going to get up there. And then he said Heel. Yeah, Heel's a tough one. I mean, you talked about it earlier, so I'll follow your lead on that one. You know the Yankees better than I, but four innings last year, four innings 2 years ago or whatever, that's tough to see where that one even comes close to.
Yeah, I mean, he could be in the bullpen eventually too if everyone's healthy. But
yeah, that's the one. And then I know I got to go check. I'm totally screwed up. I got to see the one that was under your thing here. This is where we do the good podcast. There it is. St. Louis Perfectos says, "Who are a couple of starting pitching prospects outside the consensus top 100 that could wind up pitching 100 plus useful innings this year in the bigs?" Bonus if they have quality start potential. I'll let you have that one, Ben, because honestly, if they're outside the top 100, I don't know who they are, and they're probably out there for a reason in my mind, but maybe you found someone.
Yeah, so at first I thought ADP, then I started looking at ADP. I'm like, I don't think that's right. So I think he meant the top 100
prospects.
Yeah, so and luckily – neither am I, but DC's help with this stuff. So that's kind of where my mind went. So I have four names I'm kind of okay, confident in. I'll give them to him or her, whoever's asked the question. First one is Slade Ciccone on the Diamondbacks. Erod's hurt. They have a lot of the back end of the rotation's a little iffy. I can't guarantee 100 innings, but I think he's someone who could get called up outside the top 100. Cade Povich on the Orioles. I mean, they kind of have a lot of pitching now, but I know he was a name getting tossed around as potentially seeing time this year. And then the two favorites I have, I'll save for last, are both on the in the Brewers organization. Robert Gasser, the rotation's awful, minus Peralta. And the one other name that you might be thinking is Mizorowski. He's actually in the top 100. But the other pitcher who I actually drafted, in two DCs, is Carlos F. Rodriguez. I think he had the best stats of the three of them in the minors. And I believe it was Clegg, Chris Clegg. Mm-hmm. He like retweeted something about Rodriguez and I commented, and he says he likes him, but he doesn't think he may be ready. But with the way the Brewers rotation looks, I think there's a chance he's up. I don't know if he'll get 100 innings. I don't think any of these guys may, but they're the ones I know that are like probably the best bets outside the top 100 to get called up and hopefully do well.
I just pulled up James Anderson's top 400. So it's his fantasy rankings. I don't know if this will count for what he or she is looking for, but a couple names stand out to me here. I know Uncle Ted's in the chat. Keaton Wynn is outside the top 100. He's the fifth starter for the Giants right now. I like that one quite a bit. Gaster's right there, who I like. David Festa of Minnesota should get some shots this year. I don't know if he gets 100 innings, but he's some nasty stuff. Someone else that Clegg likes, when I had Clegg and Cross on months ago after the season ended, though, to talk about prospects for each team for DCs, Cade Cavalli of Washington was one they really liked, A, because Washington has now a lot of options, and B, Cavalli was supposed to be a thing, then he got hurt, so he should get some run this year. So Cade Cavalli is another name that stands out to me because you got me channeling my DC mind now that you mentioned that. And those would be the main ones. One other one here, Connor Phillips of Cincinnati. He should get quite a bit of run with the Reds as the season goes on as well. So those are a few. I could probably slide down and try to find some more, but I'd say that's enough to get you going in the right direction. All right, Mr. Ben, that'll wrap us up this week. Before we head on out, as always, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yep. So I am on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. As Bubba mentioned at the start of the show, I hopped on the Sports Ethos crew this year to do some writing for them. Actually, today, my first solo article came out. It was recapping my first main event that I drafted last Wednesday. It was a pretty fun thing to write. Wasn't too much research because it was all fresh in my mind, so that was nice. It made writing it a little bit easier. So I had fun writing that. Check it out if you're a member of Sports Ethos. And yeah, I probably will start writing maybe next week because I'll be doing a weekly pitching NFBC article for them, looking at under-rostered players, which is going to be really scraping the bottom of the barrel because I want to make sure that they're actually available in teams or in leagues if you're playing in the main event or something like that, a league of that size. So yeah, and that's it.
Sweet. That's awesome. Yeah, go check out Ben's stuff. Sharp dude. Always love having him on the show. We're going to hopefully see Ben quite a bit this season, just like last year. So thanks for joining me, as always, my friend. And until next time.
Yep. Bubba, thanks for having me again. I can't wait for next time.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 663. Your week 1 Fab recap, bold predictions, and more. Catch y'all next time.